I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, thank you. It's good to see your smiling face again.
Is there anything in particular you'd like to cover today?
No, not especially. What did you have in mind?
Well, there's been much talk over recent months about the strength of the Australian dollar, and that has obviously had a significant effect following the GFC.
Well, yes, Ken, it has had an effect, and it's not before time. I mean, the Reserve Bank Governor, Glenn Stevens, has been trying to talk the dollar down for a long time, but any sustained weakness in our currency is going to provide a much needed boost to exporters and other businesses that don't have to compete with cheap imports. Now, the high dollar has weighed on the economy and contributed to the rise in the jobless rate, which has just snuck over 6%. That's not out of control, and I noticed that recently there was a record month of jobs advertised. I think it was 140,000 jobs were advertised. So it's not out of control, but nonetheless, if we can have a reduction in the dollar, it's going to certainly help. I mean, the Reserve Bank is caught in a bind between an overheated housing market, although that looks as though it might be cooling a little, and the broader economic softness. And it's preventing it from loosening its monetary policy anymore. In other words, it's not going to reduce interest rates, irrespective of what some economists might think. And the Reserve Bank have made it clear that they believe the Australian dollar should be trading somewhere around 85 cents relative to the American dollar. So, you've got to look at it. And with the renewed strength of the American dollar, with things looking up there, the quantitative easing policy being ceased, I don't think they're going to increase interest rates probably till the middle of next year. But, with that easing stopping in the US, you've seen the dollar fall. And with further fall in the price of iron and coal, all of that that amounts to nearly a third of Australia's export revenues. Now, iron ore used to make steel is at its lowest point probably for nearly 5 years. At around $80, $81 a ton, that's nearly $20 below the price that was used to calculate the government revenues for the next 4 years. So sustained weakness in price there could affect the government's tax take from mining companies. But the current rally in the US dollar against most major currencies has meant that there's been complacency in the timing of the US monetary tightening. But nonetheless, with a fall in the dollar, that's certainly to our advantage. And if it lasts, it will eventually help speed up Australia's economic transition away from the overdependence it's had on the mining infrastructure, investment, and other mineral exports. Plus, a softer dollar can also help Australian banks tapping into international credit markets. And on top of that, you've already seen tourist numbers improve over the past month or so. So already you're starting to see this impact. And obviously, from a commercial property investor's point of view, the overseas investors, it's like a price reduction. As the dollar falls, it just makes our property worth more without having to actually alter the worth less, I mean, to them, or cost less, not worth less, cost less, without them having to have a price reduction. So all in all, it has a beneficial effect for Australia.
If the dollar reaches what the economists are calling equilibrium at 85 US cents, how will that change the landscape?
Yeah, look, it's going to be interesting. I mean, the United States economy is now clearly on a recovery path. And as I said, the US Federal Reserve is likely to start raising interest rates sometime during 2015. And as that prospect strengthens, our dollar should head down towards that equilibrium level of around 85 cents compared to the US. When it does, Australia's economic policy and landscape should start to change fairly rapidly. I mean, the Reserve Bank of Australia, which has kept rates pretty low to offset the contractory effect of the high dollar, will start to think about raising its own official interest rates. And when it does move, it will take some of the heat out of the housing market to the relief of almost everyone, including the Reserve Bank. Now, the slight depreciation of the dollar and the strengthening recovery in the US could be the trigger for another surge in non-mining business investment. At the moment, companies are sitting on their hands. They're just waiting for a sign that the recovery is here and it's going to continue. And it will look to signs from the US. And the depreciating dollar will also be a warning that the cost of imported equipment can only go up in price. So, I mean, that's an adverse thing. Now, that can have some impact on inflation. That's something the Reserve Bank will obviously watch. But it will be the time to invest as the market starts to improve, and it could take off with a bit of a rush. New buildings and equipment embody the new technology, which gives the owners and investors a competitive advantage. And so just don't be caught napping. The dollar is coming down and interest rates will be going up sometime during next year. And up until now, there's been a sort of fascinating contradiction. There's actually been a couple of bubbles. Well, the first one in property, in that because mortgage rates are low and therefore interest rates, which are priced off the official rate, have never been lower, people have been borrowing and buying. And that's across the board, residential and commercial. But the second bubble, if you like, has been with the Australian dollar. In other words, money coming into the economy, and it's been just sloshing around. And global capital markets have seen this happening, in principally being drawn in by banks because it's cheaper money, and also people realising that if they can borrow for next to nothing in Europe and in the US, our interest rates are very attractive. As such, you need to be wary of Australia as an economy entering sort of uncharted waters, in that as the dollar falls, it's got to be seen against the global backdrop, and that is that we've never really been in this position before where we've had China underwriting our economic prosperity and the US printing money and therefore having those funds pour into our country. So obviously, as the Chinese try to slow their economy, and any slowing is not an economic thing, it's purely a policy situation in China. And as America stops its quantitative easing, we have to be aware or think through the obverse effect of those two things happening. And as such, it means that as Aussie dollar falls, there's going to be less money coming into the economy chasing higher interest rates, and therefore it might mean that the banks, or will mean, I think, the banks have less money and can therefore no longer lend at a cheaper rate. So there's going to be some adjustments, and it's a matter of just getting your house in order to cope with those.
Turning to the buoyant residential market for a moment, there seems to be apartments being built everywhere. I mean, right across Australia. Does that concern you?
Yeah, it's almost as though Australians have fallen in love with high-rise apartments and forsaken any resistance they had to vertical living. And that's what the developers would have us believe, because most of them have a full pipeline of apartments ready to flow onto the market over the next few years. Now, clearly the state governments have the same thinking, because, I mean, hardly a week passes without a planning minister in one of the major capital cities signing off on a new multi-storey apartment block, invariably with relatively little input from the local community or councils. In many cases, they're overruling them. And then there's the new major projects or precincts being announced, such as as Parramatta and Green Square in Sydney and Fisherman's Bend in Melbourne, all of which are going to deliver new high-rise capacity over the coming years. Now, there are some proponents of high-rise living that will tell you that there's been a permanent shift in tastes, and that combined with the lack of affordability for established property close to the central business area, that has moved people to think as their first choice as high-rise living, and particularly the first home buyers. You've got, as well as them, investors, people downsizing, and of course you've got your overseas buyers, all of which are active in the market. So what you have to look at is that the government, state and federal, have made some very interesting policy decisions. And what is effectively driving the boom as far as apartment purchases are concerned are the first home buyers and overseas buyers. And the reason for that is that the government has made it clear with its policy decisions that they can only buy these new apartments. I mean, first home buyers who decide to purchase new property receive grants and stamp duty exemptions that are not available to them when they purchase an existing home. Furthermore, your non-residents, your overseas buyers, are actually barred from buying established or pre-owned property under the foreign investment rules. Now, I know some people are cheating the system, but most aren't, and that's what's underpinning the apartment market. So what you've got to think about is what's going to happen when these first-time buyers and overseas investors actually decide to sell in a few years' time. Who's actually going to buy the properties from them? I mean, it won't be a new generation of overseas buyers, because they won't be allowed to buy them, given that properties are now second-hand. And it's unlikely to be a new generation of first-time buyers, because, again, they won't be able to claim all the benefits from the government, because, once again, these properties aren't new anymore. So as a result, you're going to have investors, which are the third major group in this market for apartments, who had not already seen the writing on the wall. They're going to start to want to exit. And my concern is that you're going to have a large number of sales taking place in 4, 5, 6 years' time of properties that, by just sheer definition, are cookie-cutter apartments in multi-storey blocks where, you know, you have half the block wanting to sell at a time. And it's effectively what we're doing is deferring the issue. The new properties are being bought off the plan and appear to be being absorbed. But my concern is, as I said, 4 to 5 to 6 years down the track, when these owners start to decide now is the time to sell.
What about commercial property? Is that likely to become affected by any of these factors?
Look, there are some people that will say that the Australian commercial property market is becoming overpriced. And yes, you look at yields. I mean, there was, I think, the landmark property at 52 Martin Place, Sydney, sold not that long ago for a yield of 5.17%. Now, you know, that's a very tight yield. And the demand for Australian property has remained strong compared to other international property markets. But what you need to be, or as an investor, you need to be aware of is keeping an eye on the underlying fundamentals that go to make up the value of a property. And, you know, clearly there is a bit of a disconnect, in as much as that over the last 12 months or so, yields have compressed or tightened, but equally vacancy rates have increased. I mean, in Brisbane, Adelaide, Canberra, Darwin and Perth, you know, they've shot up, you know, towards 15%. Sydney and Melbourne are hovering around the 10% mark. And I guess my personal view is that prices will continue to go up despite those softening conditions as far as some of those markets. But I think you're better placed purchasing in Sydney and Melbourne, where you're already starting to see tenants come back in, the technology, investment banks, business services, all starting to want to lease space again. So the thing you need to watch is that there are a lot of institutional super funds, overseas buyers that have cash and are simply looking for a home. And fortunately, most of that is focused in the CBDs around Australia. But what that's going to do is to force some buyers out into the suburbs. So there will be a flow-on effect, and you'll start to see prices increase out of the suburbs. And it's not driven so much by supply and demand of property. It's more just the sheer volume of funds sloshing around. And Australia is seen as a safe haven for those funds. So the overseas buyers will continue. The super funds are getting more and more money every week, so they have to find a home for that. And so in many cases, they're having to accept lower yields, therefore pay higher prices. And as I said, you will find for the average investor who will be buying in the inner city or suburbs in the key office precinct areas around the capital cities, you will stand to benefit. And I would probably counsel you not to compete, unless the fundamentals are right, within the CBD of cities around Australia. So for the next 4 to 5 years, I see the market as rosy, but you need to be aware that you want to make sure you remain an investor in property, not simply an accumulator of properties.
You know, this is all valuable stuff. I guess it's too easy to get swept up in what's going on around you and then wonder whether it was a real bubble and think you could be approaching the peak.
Yeah, look, as the dust settles and our exchange rate approaches an equilibrium point of the 85 cents that the economists are talking about, what you'll see is things cool off a little and the market may even move sideways for 6 months or so. However, I still believe that this current cycle for commercial property will be peaking at around 2019, 2020, somewhere in that region.
As always, Chris, thank you for your insights today.